We can't do full justice to the work of our guest this hour because he's a dancer. And while we could play the music he dances to, radio does not quite do ballet justice. There are similar constraints on David Hallberg himself because it's hard to convey the full impact of ballet in a book. But he does a very good job of taking us into his performances, his training, and his life. David Hallberg earned a first by becoming the first American named a principal dancer at the Bolshoi Ballet in Russia. Then injury nearly ended his career. He tells the story in his memoir, A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. David Hallberg is now a principal dancer with ABT, American Ballet Theater in New York. He's also a guest artist with the Australian Ballet and our guest on The Exchange. David, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure. You begin with a description of the ballroom scene in Romeo and Juliet, the balcony scene, I should say, in Romeo and Juliet. Maybe it is the ballroom scene. But being drenched,
there is a ballroom scene.
Ballroom scene. Okay. So, but you describe being drenched with sweat, you're nervous, you're tired, your lungs are burning, and yet it's clear there's exhilaration there, too. Is it fair to say that dance leaves you breathless in many, many ways?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Romeo and Juliet is a perfect example. The first act of Romeo and Juliet, Romeo doesn't stop, and the audience, essentially, they wouldn't really know because they're so engrossed, hopefully, in the story. But when you go off stage, the small moments that you have, you're desperately gasping for breath, trying to prepare for the next scene, and just before the balcony scene, which is the final scene of Act One. You're trying to get into a mental state to bring the first act to its climax.
Well, so it's well portrayed in the book, and so these are clearly the heights of your career. And then you give us a preview of your injury and recovery. How far into your career and what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the book is, there's a lot about me on stage, a lot of very descriptive, scenarios of what I experience in my characters or with my partners. But then, life got very real. I suffered a devastating injury, and the book also explains just the climb back up, the climb and the fight and the work and the dedication it took.
This was not a sudden injury, I gather, but one that was like, oh, this hurts a little more than it did yesterday, that kind of thing?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Wow. So and we'll get into the details later on about just how ugly things got with two rounds of surgery. As far as the art itself, your honesty is appreciated. I appreciate you writing that ballet has absurdly difficult steps. But is that the key to the beauty of it, the complexity that ultimately you make look easy?
Absolutely. And, you asked the question about does it leave me breathless? And interestingly, on stage, we are taught to make it look easy and just full of life, but exert no effort. And I think in the book I've explained that actually there is a lot of effort involved on stage and off in the rehearsal studio, in the gym, everywhere.
So does it ever feel as easy as it looks to us sitting in the comfy seats watching?
That's a good question. Interestingly, there are those moments, and as we've started to talk about Romeo and Juliet, there's a moment in balcony scene when if you have, a harmonious connection with your Juliet, everything can feel effortless. And although you are so tired, stamina is wearing thin, you're sweating buckets, you're drenched in sweat, it can feel effortless because you're so deeply embedded in the moment. You're so deeply embedded with your partner on stage that the movements, although there is a huge exertion of effort, can seem effortless.
So that brings us to the question about the relations with other dancers, and we're going to assume that Black Swan is not the best example, but I mean, how well or not do dancers tend to treat each other? Is it just like any line of work, you think?
It actually isn't like any line of work. It is such a small bubble, and everyone in the major companies around the world, we have all dedicated our lives to this, and it is it is our calling to express this art form through dance. And although there are, of course, there are jealousies and minor rivalries and things like this, I do feel that dance is such a universal language that when you get into a company, whether or not you speak Russian or French or English or Italian, you can communicate through dance, and I think that offers, you know, a beautiful kind of community of dancers around the world.
Is it a small enough bubble where if you've worked with somebody once, there's a good chance you're going to work with them again someplace else?
Absolutely. It really is such a small world. You know, you will inevitably see another dancer or another coach somewhere else.
So there's an extraordinary statement in here from someone talking to you pretty early in your career. You have everything ballet needs of a dancer, but you don't know it. Who said that, and what does that mean?
That was one of my partners at the time, Diana Vishnyova. She's a Russian, very, very well-known and respected Russian ballerina with the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg. We were rehearsing Sleeping Beauty, and I was I'm younger than her, and I was quite green at the time. And I did my variation and, you know, did my jumps and my turns and whatever. And I stopped, and usually the ballerina doesn't pipe in for a correction. It's usually the coach in the front of the room. But she, from the side of the rehearsal studio, said that exactly those words. And what she meant was, you're carrying yourself, you have to carry yourself like you know you like you have talent, you know, healthy ego per se. And here I was just trying desperately to execute steps properly, and I missed the whole goal in her eyes.
Wow. Okay. We have to ask much more about how dancers view each other's interpretations and how we're supposed to look at it too. David Hallberg's book is called A Body of Work: Dancing to the Edge and Back. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange and talk more with David in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to David Hallberg, a world-renowned ballet dancer, the first American to become a principal dancer at the Bolshoi Ballet in Russia. Injury nearly ended his career. He tells the story of his rise, his fall, and his return in A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You were just talking about that quote from Diana Vishnyova, where she said, you have everything ballet needs of a dancer, but you don't know it, which raises a question for how much room for variation there is. I mean, the steps are supposed to be done, you know, they're to the music a certain way, a certain attitude, but then how much room is there for individual interpretation within all those prescribed steps, David?
That's a great question, because it's something that I've actually struggled with for many years in my career. I talk about this very explicitly in the book in a way that I was started to dance Swan Lake, and I was told to do these steps. And you know, there was supposed to be a character behind hundreds of years of tradition of the way that these steps were executed. And I think that has been the greatest challenge for me as an artist in classical ballet, is to find authenticity in, you know, the princely roles or the roles that audiences know so well and have seen for so long. And, you know, I think that's the biggest challenge, is to find your individuality in a certain framework. And you can't just do any step you want. You can sort of tweak things here and there, but the true, I think, challenge is to find originality and authenticity in a certain framework.
Well, which is interesting, because the framework seems to some points quite constrained. I mean, when I think about the way that people talk to each other in ballet, it's almost like the close tolerances of engineering. You know, they'll know when you have tried to improvise a new step or just got a step wrong, don't they?
Absolutely.
So you've given us a good taste so far for your adult life. Take us back to your childhood. You're from the heartland of America, it sounds like.
You know, the total heartland. I was born in South Dakota in Rapid City, and then moved to Phoenix, Arizona, where I started really training hard and spent most of my childhood, my adolescence. And so, you know, I went to the suburban schools and public schools, and you know, the all-American upbringing. I certainly had that.
So how old were you when you saw the all-American dancer Fred Astaire on TV?
I was eight years old, and he just ignited this fascination. Certainly what it was at the very beginning was fascination. You know, I looked at Fred Astaire gliding across the TV screen, and I thought, wow, what is he doing? I had no idea. There was no dance around me except for that. And so I just idolized him. I wanted to be exactly like him. I taped nickels on the bottoms of my penny loafers to make tap shoes. You know, it was so primal, you know, my interest in dancing.
I love the story of the nickels on the tap shoes. So your parents finally got you some tap shoes after a while, it sounds like.
They did.
So you're not that old, but it sounds like even in your town and in your time, this is what, in the 90s, unusual for boys to dance?
Yeah, very. I mean, listen, I was the only boy around that danced. I was singled out. I loved what I did, but no one seemed to want to do it with me, you know, other guys. You know, there were enough girls in dance class and in my school that wanted to dance, but I was the only guy. I was really out for the count, you know.
Mm-hmm. How supportive were your parents bought you the tap shoes, so obviously they were willing to say, you know, David Hallberg, you might have a future in dance, but how supportive beyond buying the tap shoes were they?
From the very beginning, they were so unbelievably supportive. They realized this fascination with dancing, and they decided to just nurture that. And interestingly, they didn't even know what talent was. They didn't even know what made a good dancer, but they just knew that I wanted to dance. I wanted to dance more and more and more. And as I started growing up, you know, in my mid-teens to late teens, when I was really studying hard, really, really working hard with a teacher in Arizona, they realized that this was my destiny. You know, this was my future. And they tried their best to guide it in any way that they could.
David Hallberg is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book about his rise to the top in the dance world is called A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. So your parents were very supportive. Now, boys your own age, that's a whole different story. How bad did it get, David?
Oh, it got really, really bad. I mean, and I talk about it a lot in the book, in that I was so bullied, but I didn't know why. You know, I knew that I loved to dance. I knew that what came out of me was so natural, but I couldn't understand why I was such a target. But I was. I mean, I was called every name in the book. I would just walk into a room and people would zone in on me, and I would even go to a different school. You know, I went from South Dakota to Minneapolis to Phoenix, and every time I went to a different school, I was bullied. It's not like it was just an acute group in one school. And it just was so confusing as a young kid. You know, you just want to be accepted by your contemporaries, and I was being rejected by my contemporaries.
Well, your parents took you to a psychiatrist at one point when you were getting bullied, which I'm still not sure I quite understand. But what advice did you get from the psychiatrist?
You know, the psychiatrist told me to think of an alter character. I'll never forget it. His name was Tough Tom. And I was supposed to think of Tough Tom when these kids were bullying me. And interestingly, it didn't really work. I would go to school, get bullied, and I had a hard time mustering up Tough Tom. He was sleeping somewhere. I don't know what.
Tough Tom never stepped into his role.
Yeah. Tough Tom never stepped up to the plate.
So how old were you when you took Dance Beyond Tap? And before you answer that, I mean, can you still do the tap moves? Can you do the paddles and the buffaloes and all that stuff?
I think, you know, it is embedded in me. I haven't put on tap shoes for over 15 years. With these feet that I have now, I will not be putting tap shoes on. But, you know, then I really, around 13 or 14, I found my absolute calling. I crystallized my calling, and that was in classical ballet. And what I loved so much about classical ballet was the dedication, the perfectionism, the precision that, in essence, you know, it was never good enough. And I wanted to strive to make everything better, but it really never was good enough. And that's what attracted me so much to classical ballet at the beginning.
Are you a perfectionist in other parts of your life? I mean, were you as dedicated to your schoolwork, or when you make a meal, if you cook, do you get very, very careful with the details?
That's a good question, and the answer is no. I'm not. I'm late. I'm sometimes late with my bills. I don't cook a good meal, but when it comes to my dancing, I was just so focused and so dedicated. And you know, I have to say that's the true test of a calling. I talk a lot about the calling in the book, and that was my calling. It really poured out of me, the dedication. It was never a laborious work. It was hard work, but I was more than happy to do it.
David Hallberg is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's principal dancer with the ABT, the American Ballet Theater in New York, guest artist with the Australian Ballet, formerly with the Bolshoi, the first American to be a principal in the Bolshoi company. So that was a big deal in his life and in the life of dance generally. He's written a memoir called The Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. He had been injured and had to recover over a course of a couple of years. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So this lighting up of your soul with ballet, how much ballet instruction had you had when you first auditioned for the Nutcracker?
Zero. I had had a couple of classes here and there. It was certainly not a focus of mine. But it's funny. I saw this flyer of auditions for the Nutcracker at my jazz studio, and I don't know what made me say I want to audition, but I went to an audition. I was totally in over my head. I had no idea what to do, but lo and behold, I got a part. And then I just would watch, watch backstage, and it just was the way the dancers prepared and performed, and just the whole world was so fascinating to me.
So you didn't get the role you were auditioning for, I gather, in that first Nutcracker.
No, I didn't.
but there it was on stage. What did that feel like the first time to do ballet before an audience?
You know, it sort of was a bit of a non-event for me. It wasn't so much about me performing as it was me observing the world of a ballet company. And again, that has stayed with me as a dancer. I love the work behind a performance, the rehearsals, the sweat, the time in the studio. And then, you know, of course I love performing, but it's never been that has never been the end goal. I don't feel like I want to live on stage. I feel like I want to live in the art world, in the dance world, but not necessarily, you know, people aren't going to be prying me off the stage at a ripe old age.
But it sounds like, as the currently popular expression goes, that you had found your tribe.
Absolutely. And, you know, as much as the bullying, as relentless as the bullying was when I was a kid, and as scarring as it was, at 4 p.m., once school was over, and I would head over to my to my jazz studio or ballet studio, this was my tribe. This was my refuge. This was my outlet. And thank God I had that. I mean, you know, as bad as it got, I still could just express myself after school.
Well, and then eventually you were able to find that refuge in school, too. You found a refuge in a person and a school. Tell us about Jack and ASA.
I found refuge certainly at ASA, and when I was young, I fell in love for the first time, and it was with my childhood friend Jack, and we we just, it was this pure, honest love, and it's what made me come to terms with the fact that I was gay, and also the fact that my parents realized I was gay and accepted me for that. And so, through the years, I progressively found my community and my form of expression that fit me and people that accepted me. I just had to, go through a lot before that happened.
Was there anything, the bullying that you'd gotten in regular public school, once you got to ASA, the Arizona School for the Arts, did that continue, or was it just not the kind of thing that happened there?
It stopped instantly.
Wow.
It was a new art school. It's still thriving in Phoenix, Arizona. But I was there in the inaugural year, and it was almost as if all of the artistic kids in Phoenix congregated and commiserated over the miserable experiences we had had in public school. So we were this idyllic tribe of just sort of ugly ducklings that said, we know we didn't fit in the norm, in the mainstream, on the football field, but this is where we fit in, and we all, respect and love each other.
School and support group rolled into one, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It surprised me to read in the book, David, that you didn't want to go all over to ballet when you first got to ASA. Why not?
I think I still had some experiencing to do in the jazz world. I still viewed ballet as boring and rigid and dusty and, just too strict. I had some growing up to do. If you have what growing up you can do when you're 13. But, I then realized that I really wanted to work in ballet. It wasn't just overnight that I just went straight to ballet. I gradually left my jazz studio and my tap dancing and all of that, and then just found even more of an obsession and a love for the art form in ballet.
David Hallberger is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, now with ABT, the American Ballet Theatre, and the Australian Ballet as well, formerly at the Bolshoi. His book is called A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. How tough a teacher did you have at ASA and Mr. Hahn?
He was relentless. He was, as people would say, totally old school. I think he had a very strict upbringing in Singapore. He knows what hard work is, and he instilled that in his students. Although it wasn't a private school, I was going to I was taking class with anyone. But he was the strictness and the discipline and the sort of focus he instilled in me shaped me into the professional I became and I still am. Hard work absolutely pays off. And he never, I say this in the book, he never praised me. He never said, you're good. You have talent. You're going to go far places or, whatever. He just said, more, fix that, fix that. He was like a drill sergeant, and I thrived on that.
There's a picture of you. It's a great picture of you and he at danceteacher.com getting together well into your career. And it's pretty clear from the body English there. He's pretty proud of you now. Has he said as much?
He has. We've become great supporters of each other. He's seen me dance throughout my entire career. I'm so proud to call him, my teacher, and I think he's quite proud of me as well. So it's mutual.
So you had, 5 years of ballet, and you auditioned for ABT's studio company. Why ABT? It seemed like you had a lock, like a tractor beam on ABT from your early days in ballet.
I did. ABT, when I was growing up, had a generation of dancers, of male dancers, that were just taking over the dance scene. They were so exciting. They were so varied. You know, there was a Cuban and a Russian and a Spanish guy and, you know, an American, and they were everywhere. And I idolized those dancers, and all those dancers were at American Ballet Theater, and that's where I had to be.
So describe the scene. I mean, this big audition for a major company. I can imagine your knees knocking like castanets. What was it like for you?
You know, interestingly, it wasn't so much an audition for the company, but it was an audition for the summer intensive. So I was in my teens, and there were kids my age all around me. There were, I don't know, over 100, 200 people in the room. And it was exactly what you would imagine. I mean, we were all just flailing around the studio trying to impress. And here I was just trying to do exactly the same, hoping I get in.
And get in he did. Summer Intensive. The name itself sounds a little scary. We'll find out more about that and the rest of the road to the top for David Hallberg in ballet. His book is called A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. We'll get into more specifics about what happened as an adult in ballet when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is David Hallberg, principal dancer with the American Ballet Theatre, ABT, in New York, guest artist with the Australian Ballet, and formerly principal dancer with the Bolshoi, and the first American to make that move. One of the things that certainly made it clear that he was one of the best in the world. His book about his life and his return from injury, which obviously can end the career of a ballet dancer, but he's recovered from that. A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. You're welcome to join the conversation on the exchange. Share some thoughts with David Hallberg about his work if you've seen it. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we're just talking about the audition to get into the summer intensive. The name alone scares me. What goes on at a summer intensive, David?
It's a group of kids that go to New York City for 6 weeks, and they just work their butts off. They are engrossed into the ABT world, and they get a 6 week summer intensive of classes and experiencing ABT life.
So it went pretty well, it sounds like.
It went well, yeah. You know, the director then of American Ballet Theatre is still the director, Kevin McKenzie. And so he has seen me since I was 16 years old. I'm 35 now. He's seen me almost for 20 years, you know, and just shape into the person and dancer and artist I am. He's really, since then, served as a mentor and as somewhat of a father figure to me.
So you had a choice to make when you go back from summer intensive about senior year in high school. Where did you choose to spend that?
I decided to just leave everything, all of my comforts in America, and go to the Paris Opera Ballet School. And, it was a huge risk, a huge jump. But inevitably, I never looked back. It was a very hard experience, but something I grew so much from.
I love the story of getting the letter from the Paris Opera Ballet School. Yeah. Hell of a time to realize you can't read French.
Exactly. Yeah. So I got the letter in the mail, and of course it's all in French. And, you know, I think in the academic world, if you get a thin letter in the mail, it means that they've rejected you. If you get a big package in the mail, it means that they've accepted you. Well, I got a thin letter in the mail. But it basically said, you know, we're welcoming you to the school. We started September.
Wow. So there you were in Paris. I mean, these are your people. This is your stuff. But you were labeled l'Américaine. How do they treat you?
Exactly how you just described. Like an American, they had no interest in how I danced, how well I danced. They pushed me in the back of the studio. The kids were, I was went back to being bullied for a very different reason. I think also just because, you know, I went to Paris as a 16-year-old, so naive, and I had never left America and thought I could make friends in the true American way, you know, in 5 minutes. And all of a sudden, all these kids are my best friends, and they did not warm up to that. And so I spent the whole year sort of alone and learning to speak French. But it was because of that experience, it was invaluable. I mean, it was very coming of age, and I experienced life alone, you know, life in Paris.
How, after a while, did you give as good as you got from the French kids being snippy with you?
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, were you able to give some of it back to them?
You know, and I do explain this in the book. I go back to the company that they all got into, which is the Paris Opera Ballet, and I came back as a guest artist. So, you know, 10 years later, I was invited to dance with the company. So, to me personally, I don't know how others would interpret it, but it was a beautiful full circle kind of experience to be able to go back to the company that basically just didn't care and go in and come in as an invited dancer.
How subjective is the way that people look at ballet? I mean, there's so much precision to it. The steps have to be right. It has to be on the music, all that stuff. But I mean, does it get to the point where some people just don't like certain dancers because they don't like the shape of their calves or something?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, dance is a very, it is an aesthetic art form. And some, and just like any, I mean, any visual art or any music, you know, some people don't like the sound of someone's voice. Some people don't like the shape of someone's legs, you know. And I think what's most important, and what I have learned throughout the career, is that it doesn't really matter how the body looks, how you dance, what tricks you can do, how many turns you can do. It matters how you express the art form and how you express yourself as a dancer. And so you may have poorly shaped legs for classical ballet. You may have, you may be too tall, too short, whatever. But if you are an artist that's destined to express art, you will come through and you will touch your audience.
Which you have done clearly many times. I wonder what the bullying had done through all the years, though, including in Paris. And so once you got into the studio company for ABT, when you came back from the year in Paris, did you feel like you could get to know the people fairly well, or are you somewhat reserved?
You know, I was somewhat reserved. I think I took my past experiences and I learned important lessons. You know, I just kind of, I observed things from the outside a little bit, and then I warmed up. I mean, I think that's certainly age that did that to me, and experience.
Who were some of the dancers along the way who helped you develop? I mean, you clear in the book there were some people you connected with and some you didn't, but the ones who helped you in the same general position, not the teachers, I mean, who were some of the people who really helped guide you along the way?
Yeah, you know, I've always drawn influence by other dancers and other artists, and inspiration and creative sort of, impetus. But Natalia Osipova, who is one of my favorite partners to dance with, she's a Russian from the Bolshoi. We first danced together at ABT in New York City. And she is someone that has really redefined my meaning of a partnership and a connection and how to truly express on stage. And during the injury, one of my goals or one of my incentives to fight so hard to get back was to dance with her again. And we're being afforded the opportunity now that I'm back, which is such a beautiful gift.
That sounds wonderful. So let's talk about, well, actually, before we get to the injury, I want to talk about the Bolshoi because that came first. So how did that come about?
I had known the then director of the Bolshoi for a while, and we had, exchanged sort of niceties, the dance world being as small as it is. And I went to Moscow on tour with ABT, and he said, "I want to have lunch with you." And lo and behold, he made this offer to join the company. And Bolshoi was never on my radar. You know, it was never on my wish list. It was on my wish list, certainly, to dance there as a guest artist, but I never thought it was possible as an American to dance with the company. And here was Sergei just sort of redefining that and saying, "I want you to come to the company." And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I finally realized, you know, this is life saying this is what you have to do.
So obviously a different phase in your life from when you were in Paris, in a strange place, in a strange language. But, I mean, I guess I worried about you when I read about you going off to Moscow. As were you labeled the Amerikansky there or something?
That's good. I wasn't labeled Amerikansky to my face. You know, I maybe behind my back I was. But I have to be honest, when I went to Russia, so many things defied my expectation and redefined my way of the way Russians welcome people. And Bolshoi Theater just, you know, they really embraced me. They opened their arms to me. They welcomed me, and it took me by surprise, because here I pictured I would be booed on stage, I would be rejected by the company, but it was the complete opposite. I think people were very fascinated and interested to see why I had chosen to go there, what I was going to do there, how I was going to dance. I felt a true warmth from Bolshoi Theater.
And in terms of audience responses, you thought you'd be booed. Obviously, they didn't do that. But, I mean, were they very, very good to you?
They were. And, you know, there's few comparison to the Russian audience in ballet. Ballet to Russians is vital. It's a part of the Russian blood, Russian culture. And it's very, very important to them. So the audiences are very well educated, but also very very sort of sympathetic and accepting and welcoming, and they have such respect for ballet dancers. And that's what was so amazing to experience, was the gratitude from the audience, from audiences when they applaud you and welcome you.
Wow. So what was it during the Bolshoi gig that the injury became clear that it was going to be something I had to deal with?
It was about 4 years in, 5 years in. I just started feeling some pain, and again, I was still dancing at American Ballet Theater. I was dancing all over the world, really, and the pain eventually just became unbearable, and I knew I had to do something about it.
And you did, and for people who have a strong gag reflex, I have to warn you, there are pictures in the book, including of David's ankle and foot, I believe after the first surgery and before the second, but there must have been periods then you really thought, oh, well, I guess I'll have to find a new line of work.
You know, it wasn't so much it's time to stop dancing, because I was so adamant about, when I had my first surgery, I'm going to get back. You know, what are you talking about? I'm going to be gone for 6 to 8 months, and then I'll be back in action. And, you know, what could have gone wrong went wrong. The first surgery was a complete failure. I had to have a second surgery to fix the first. And I had so many complications in between surgery one and two and after two, that I started to lose my willpower and lose my the clarity of purpose and the clarity of where I was headed. And it was during that time that I started to contemplate retirement. You know, everyone knows that a career-ending injury can happen, but no one thinks that it will happen to them. And it was happening to me, and I had a fork in the road. It was either retire or go down to a rehabilitation team at the Australian Ballet, whom I had known is world renowned, and give it one last shot. And I obviously chose the latter.
So how does everything feel? Is it all working right these days?
Better than before. You know, when I went down there, I instilled a trust in this team, and they are, you know, the best team in the dance world. They are so ahead of the curve, and they completely reshaped my instrument. And so now I feel better than ever.
I want to go back to Russia for just a second, because as you were leaving for Russia, you appeared on Stephen Colbert's old show, The Colbert Report. And he asked if you were a double agent, ha-ha. But I just wonder from your perspective if this moment in history is kind of weird to have the strength of connection you have with Russia and all this political controversy between Russia and the United States at the same time.
Interestingly, politically, when I joined the Bolshoi, things were a lot more progressive. And now, obviously, there are certain relations between Russia and the U.S. politically. But what it has solidified for me is that my relationship with Russian art and Russian culture hasn't changed. And that's a true manifestation of the fact that dance is universal, and it breaks those political barriers at times.
Truly it does. The book is called A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back. It's the work of David Hallberg, who, you're a lucky guy. You're going to Hoboken tonight, I see, to do a little session with Misty Copeland at Little City Books.
Yeah.
All right. Well, best of luck, and thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you.
Take care.